I played college basketball, and the only thing I cared about was the And-One mixtape.
He's got some sauce.
Does he?
Yeah, he's got some.
I mean, I can still get it in the shirt and hit the ball around. Yeah. And
some may call me white sauce, but no one's ever called me that, like, ever.
Welcome to Coach 'Em Up Podcast. I'm with Zach Zillner, and we're joined today with the legendary guest, Corey Schlesinger.
Legendary, I'll take that.
You are legendary.
Nah, shit.
Corey, I know who you are. Zach knows who you are. Probably everyone listening knows who you are. Give us like your 10-second elevator pitch about where you're at now.
Yeah, so played college basketball, college strength for about 10 years, NBA for a little bit. Now I'm back in college, and that's about it.
Let's freaking go.
Well, enough with that. Let's get into the weeds on this.
Yeah.
So what's been on your brilliant brain lately?
The skill. Like, I think we focus so much on this aspect of general physical preparation, which is obviously an important piece in the equation. But the reality is skill can dominate physicality and physicalness, if you will, pretty fast. But it just depends on what game you're playing. Like in the NBA, it's like the problem is once you see something, you can't unsee it. So that was my evolution. And that's why I'm like, okay, I'm on this new thing with this, you know, assistant coaching deal, going back to college, was let's like bigger, faster, stronger, cool. But I think there's another layer to this that we're totally just missing the boat on. And if you can understand both sides of it, these hybrid roles are really starting to become very, very interesting. And I think you're going to get a lot more squeeze of the juice than what if you just beat the hammer with bigger, faster, stronger.
What was your biggest, I guess, change in thought process? When did that happen from being, you know, college strength coach for the majority of your career, then going into the NBA, which is arguably the best basketball players in the world?
Oh, I've been super lucky that I played the lowest level of college basketball. So I got to experience what terrible basketball is, terrible organized basketball as myself.
Yeah.
And then I've been so lucky that my coaching career dropped me off at each level, like in succession. For example, low major, mid major, high major, NBA. And that's where I was like, oh, I got to see this like proper progression of not only skill, but genetics.
Yeah.
And then also raw talent and then age. And the thing is, we get stuck in college basketball or high school, you know, private sector or whatever for so long, we forget about age. And once you become a little bit older, you become a lot more refined. It ain't 5x5 anymore.
Yeah.
Because 5x5 takes a lot out of you, yep. Especially if you're already strong. So that's what's cool about basketball. When you're 17 to 21 years old, actually to about 25, you can just continue down the road of general strength. And it's going to reap a lot of benefits for you. But after that, you get a certain level of strength. You kind of need to focus on other things. And because like when you go to the well, the water becomes shallower and shallower.
Totally.
So you just can't keep beating down general strength because there's not going to be anything left. And so that's where going to the NBA, that was a big difference when I saw the best athletes in the world and arguably the best skill in the world. And all of a sudden they don't back squat or can't actually back squat.
Right.
Heavy.
It's not happening.
Can't deadlift. Can't do these traditional means and methods. And then I started going, oh, maybe we're wrong. Like, what an idea that the coach is actually wrong. And so, and that's why I go back to that point. Once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, our goal is to get you to the next level. And then they get to the next level and it's like, wait, we don't do GP, like we don't do West Side. We don't. There's no chains and bands, right? On the,
where's the accommodating resistance?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you start going, oh man, you really live on that leg extension, huh?
And
granted, if you're already wired to be one of the best movers and one of the best skillful athletes as an aging athlete in the world, the only thing that pops up are local issues. So then you're like, oh, my knee's banged up. Well, all right, let's just isolate the knee. And then that's when you're going to start seeing what's going to have the cascading effect. Like if something local is going on, don't keep blowing up global things to help fix that local thing.
Right.
No, take care of the local thing. The hard wire is already there. Just change the tire, yeah. Or inflate the tire. And then it's like, oh, go race again. But we get stuck in our head as meatheads that we're like, well, if our guys don't look good lifting in the context of lifting for weightlifting sports, then we did a bad job as a quote unquote strength coach. Mm-hmm. And man, that's what really reminded me of, we can be important, but we can also be extremely detrimental.
Totally.
And so, you know, you look at national championships every year, you look at world championships every year, and you look at the strength coaches for those teams. I would say half the time you'd be like, I respect that guy. The other half the time you're like, I know what they do. That's crazy.
Yep.
So then you go, well, you just bring in a halfway competent strength coach and you're probably going to have the same results.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of the saying, it's like a lot of the best athletes, they win, they thrive in spite of the strength coach. Yeah. Or in spite of any coach for
in
that.
In spite matter. Of any coach.
Don't yes. tell people that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Shh, everybody.
Ruin contracts real fast.
I had like three questions come to mind, but in an effort to not rabbit hole 4 minutes into the pod, you mentioned the marriage and how inseparable skill and then like the general strength and preparation has become in your lens and your view of training. What was, you talked about the catalyst. What does that look like today? Like, how do you marriage those things at Texas? And what does like a typical session, or I guess what a non-typical for most people?
Yeah, for sure. Like, the way I would look at it is there's the collegiate model and there's, you know, the professional model. And in the collegiate model, you're set up in these constraints where there's rules that you have to abide by. Right. So for example, technically the strength coach can't be on the court, right? Can't even pass basketballs, you can't rebound, because there's that delineation between physical performance or physical preparation and skill development. So rather you're a true coach or you're a strength coach. So those two things are separate, but in professional basketball, those lines don't matter. And so one of my big like aha moments, I was in the first 3 months of my job and getting NBA players to actually do a warm-up is kind of tough, like team warm-ups, and it's like if you ask them to do too much it turns into what are we doing exactly.
Come on, man, because what are we doing,
dude? The reality is they do 3.5 games a week.
That's
like nuts. That's where they empty really their nuts. tank. So then the practice model, practices are obviously pretty low as far as activity level.
Yeah.
So then you're going to ask them to ramp them up for like, all right, guys, we got flying 20s today. Like you're not getting to that. But what I found out, like at Stanford, I was like 226, Corey. I was an awesome meathead. I loved myself back then.
Right.
And then I go to the NBA and they looked at that and they're like, oh, here's a meathead.
Right.
And can't I'm like, move. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then I was like, oh no. And then there's one day, it was like a light bulb moment. And I go, I'm going to do a warm up with a basketball, because I played college basketball and the only thing I cared about was the And1 mixtape.
Dude has handles. Yeah. He's Let's got go. Some sauce.
Does he?
Yeah, he's got some.
I mean, I can still get it in the shirt and hit the ball around. Yeah. And
some may call me white sauce. But no one's ever called me that, like ever.
I feel like you and I being gingers, it would end up being like red sauce.
It would definitely
like,
be red like, sauce,
yeah,
for
tomato
sure.
sauce.
And then back to hot sauce. Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. It all comes back to hot sauce. Yeah.
You are hot sauce.
And then my coach would say too much sauce.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, okay. Sit down.
My bad.
Yeah.
But as soon as I got a ball in my hands and we started doing just very general patterns with a basketball in our hands, then all of a sudden they're like, oh, wait, Corey can move.
Yeah.
Corey can Corey play basketball? Because you just can't go up and be like, hey, I play college basketball, you should listen to me.
Right.
That's a weird conversation.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm trying to validate the reason why you should do this warm up. But as soon as I just showed some flow, then I was like, oh, I'm more valuable as a mover than I am as this, you know,
and jacked statue. Corey. Like everyone just assumes like he's our strength and conditioning coach, like he knows how to lift.
He just he's strong. Lift. Like, but what's the bridge?
Yeah,
you know, into what we're talking about, skill.
Yeah,
and so that was like my aha moment. So to go back to your question, can you revisit?
Yeah, what does that marriage look like?
Oh, what does that marriage look like? Yeah, great question. So first off, there's got to be an understanding of what is the missing bucket for each athlete. Like, so what are the skills that they need to work on?
Yeah.
And if we have, you know, just like we do with force plates, right? They jump and then we have all these metrics, and then those metrics are the archetype of that individual. Eccentric RFD or concentric impulse, you know, the amortization, whatever, or RSI mod, whatever their thing is that they're special at or they're deficient at, we need to have something to understand that. Yeah. So now that's where there's a big subjective piece, because it's hard to quantify skill other than did it happen, did it not happen?
Right. Did you make or miss the shot?
For exactly. Example? So now we're in skill acquisition and motor learning. So this is where I'm very honored in the position that I'm currently at with the current university that I'm at, that I have an awesome player development coach. His name's KJ. He's unreal, because he understands skill acquisition and motor learning. So we're talking the same language, we're having the same science. And that's where we can say, hey, these are physical limitations. Are you seeing that in his skill acquisition? Example, shooting.
Yeah.
If a guy can't load a wrist, I use this example all the time. If a guy can't load a wrist, that means he can't quote unquote cock the ball back.
Right.
Then Then that's a physical limitation that's going to have an inconsistency in their shooting.
Yeah.
So how do we fix that physical limitation to allow them to now open up the window for opportunity for skill acquisition or motor learning?
Sure.
And that's the blend, is you got to have a very competent person on the coaching side. You got to have a very competent person on the strength side and understand the limitations of the athlete. And then you build the program from there. So I hope that answers your question.
That's a beautiful answer. I can't help but think while you're talking, like, one, how fortunate you are that you're in a situation. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's fortunate. But as I'm hearing you talking, I'm like, okay, here's what Corey did. Corey went to the NBA. He saw where college was missing big time.
Yes.
And you showed up, and then you, I was going to use another terminology that I'm not going to use, but you let it all hang out. You put everything on the table.
Right.
And you said, here's what I think it can look like.
For sure.
Here's how it could be.
100%.
And then you kind of made a spot for yourself. Yeah. I mean,
I'm very fortunate to be one of one.
Yeah,
as of right now. So I'm very honored.
Can you talk a little bit about, like, because we've alluded to it, but can you, you know, define your role with the team?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm an assistant coach. So I'm on the coaching staff, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
But my technical title is assistant coach and a director of player health and performance. So I oversee sports medicine and what's happening in our return to play scenario. And then I'm also overseeing the strength and conditioning. And then I get to work with the coaching staff on how we're developing skill. And that's where KJ, he's the lead on that. And he makes my life extremely easy. But we're able to build out these models to hopefully make better shooters in the weight room, not just bigger, faster, stronger athletes totally. In the weight room. And so, yeah, I mean, we can double down on strength, but then you're doing all these compressive strategies for what?
Yeah.
Just the look a certain part, which mm-hmm. don't get me wrong. They're college kids. You add progressive resistance. And
it works.
A progressive overload and yeah. feed them, then they'll look better.
Yeah.
There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it.
Yeah, they're genetically gifted.
What I see more than anything, and I think Zach can attest to this too, the thing that I hear all the time is, back in high school, I used to have bounce.
Yeah,
I hear that all the time. Back in high school, man, I used to have bounce. And for all the years I heard that, I'm like, oh, they're just playing basketball more. And the more I thought about it, I go, no, maybe we are compressing the bejesus out of
right
with all of these compressive strategies and making them more muscularly driven.
Totally.
And now they can't compress and expand well. They just compress well.
Yeah.
And oh yeah, that's going to be a lot harder to quote unquote have bounce.
Yeah.
And so that's where, you know, you see basketball
You're
players
training out what makes them special.
Bingo.
In an effort to make them look jacked in the jersey.
100%, which don't get me wrong. You can technically have both to a certain degree.
Totally.
Between 17 and 21.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're kind of who you are, and that's who you should be.
Yeah.
You know, and then you can, you know, the goal is like, be like Bruce Lee, like the most efficient level of strength. Like
totally.
Whatever ounce of hypertrophy you're adding, it has a direct impact in how you move and how you play and how you express yourself.
With this new position, how have you changed like the narrative of your typical like strength and performance coach to now blending skill? Because that isn't something where a coach would go to a strength coach and be like, what do you think about his shot? Like, right. How are you able to navigate that and not step on people's toes?
So that's a good thing about coming from the NBA. That makes things a little bit easier, mm-hmm. right? That conversation, because when you see something, you have a level of expertise that you can bring to the table. But you know, when you played it, now you have more context.
Totally.
And this can go into a rant later, but
hell yeah.
How many football strength coaches are basketball strength coaches? A lot. How many basketball strength coaches are at a Power 5 football program as the head strength coach? Yeah. I think none.
Yeah, I don't know of any.
None. So All right, we're just going to do the rant now. So the funny thing is you have football strength coaches who don't get their Power Five job, right, and then they come to basketball because that's the next highest revenue.
Yeah.
And so what do you think they're doing, quote unquote, basketball, you know, training?
Right.
And if you're a good coach, you can coach any sport.
Yes.
No ifs, ands. I got a national championship in men's golf. And when, wow, I was at Stanford, I don't swing a golf club.
See him swing.
At all.
Not hot sauce.
And I'll tell you this, and it's probably even more of a definition of a strength coach can hurt you more than help you.
Right.
So I just did things that were very sound.
Yeah.
And just very simple. And that's from the physical side. That's probably all you really need. And then let the skill coach, which in that case is the swing coach or the golf coach, handle the rest.
Yeah.
Pretty easy pass off. Hang on, I forgot where we're going with that. But it's...
I got another question.
Yeah.
Oh, it was your rant.
Oh, the rant.
Yeah, rant.
So yeah, back to the rant. Back to the
juicy stuff. When you're talking about how a coach can come to you and ask you about shooting or ask you about skill acquisition, well, when you play and you've seen and then you understand physics and physiology, then you have a better way of, here's a objective way of saying how these are the best movers, how they move. How's our guy who doesn't move that way? Let's bridge that gap. And here's the physical aspect to it. Here's the technical aspect to it. And then you got to finish off with the tactical aspect of it. For example, if you're out of position, you're going to look really bad defensively, even though you move unbelievably well.
Right.
But if you're always, sure, in the wrong spot.
He's too slow, Corey.
Get too slow. Yeah. His feet's too slow. Actually, no, he's always out of position.
Right.
That's why he's too slow. He's actually the fastest guy we have, which you see that. You see that from a lot, actually. Corey, you know, we don't get enough of this or we don't do enough of that. Okay, great. But the metrics that you validate to say those things are the most important, they actually double down and they're very, very good at that in their selective spaces, like the weight room. It's a tactical aspect and we just got to work together.
Yeah.
And that's where it's a cool thing about it. Technical, tactical, physical. And then we just have this life where we can just feed each other and hopefully we can create a really good product.
I mean, the buy-in, just being an outsider watching, it's cool to see a coach that obviously knows the X's and O's of strength conditioning, played basketball, but like Corey's in the film room also.
Yeah.
So like he can have that same conversation with an athlete of, hey, you're out of position on this defensive scheme. You need to be more shaded in on this play. So I think that adds another layer of like buy-in of like, you did it, you understand the sport.
And that's where, if I was to ask a head football coach in the Power Five, hey, I'm a basketball strength coach. Want me to be the strength coach for your team? You're like, you don't know the game.
Right.
But yet the other way around.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you can get us bigger and tougher. Get that guy.
Right. Mat drills.
And don't get me wrong. You can have great general physical preparation if you have great skill development and great coaches. But if you truly want to peel back that last layer of context and meaning and intention to every rep, every set, every prescription, then that's where the guy who actually played, the guy who actually been at certain levels can hopefully unveil some things in practice, in practices that most coaches are doing to maybe get away from certain traditions.
Yeah. I think it's the misconception of like what our job is as performance coaches. Cause for so many years it was bigger, faster, stronger, you're tough. And who is doing it at the highest level? Football.
Right.
So, you know, every coach usually watches football and like, we need our guys running around 100%. Tough like that. And
yeah.
And I think they have this different idea of like who you are and who you're supposed to be.
I couldn't agree more with that.
I think that's why there's a bunch of confusion usually.
Well, you've even seen football guys in the NBA, but they don't last long.
Yeah.
And
what do you attribute that to?
The game, man. Like the travel's crazy. I mean, 82 game season. That's a lot. So, I mean, I know I got burnt out.
Totally.
I mean, 82 game season is crazy.
It's brutal.
And I just had my daughter and I'm like, dude, I want to go home every night. I want to see her.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in Chicago, then, you know, Philadelphia and then Washington, D.C. And then, oh, man, I missed that. You know, so for me, it made a lot more sense to be in this kind of environment where I get to go home. The longest I'm gone is 36 hours. And that's 14, 15 times a year.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Opposed to every other week, I'm gone. Mm-hmm. You know, so we miss 4.5 months out of the year. That's crazy. You know,
so with 86 games. College is what, 36, hopefully?
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully.
And so you had, I guess you developed your microdosing principles. Can you kind of give the Reader's Digest for people under a rock and then how you've been able to change that even more so for the NBA?
For sure. Like, in the microdosing model is really simple. Every day you practice or play or participate in sport, we're going to do some form of performance training, rather it's strength and conditioning, plyometrics. So we want to complement the days. So if we're undulating or we're seeing what we're just reverse engineering what their demands are for the day. So for example, if it's a hard practice day, I need it to be a hard weight room session as well. The reason why, because we want high days high and low days low, because we want to be able to stress the body, recover, and then stress the body again. The great thing about the microdosing model, most of the time in in-season training for collegiate or professional sports, is they train anywhere between 1 to 2 times a week because, right, games. But if you train every day 5 to 6 times, then that means your sessions are only going to be anywhere between 20 to 25 minutes. In the traditional model, it's 1 to 2 times a week, and it's anywhere between 45 minutes to an hour and 10 minutes. So now when you think about it from a dosing perspective, all we're doing is increasing training frequency. So it's the volume stays the same. The only difference is we train more often. Yeah. So if you spread it out, and there's a lot, and this is the cool thing, since I've started this in 2019, because Stanford. So I started at Stanford, it was 2016, 2017. It's now being internationally researched, it's being modeled, and it's being proven. And that's the part that I think is really cool, because the ideology behind it essentially was, we're a blue collar program, we're gonna lift. And it was the constraints of the environment I was in, because we're at Stanford and that campus is huge and the demands are huge. And we are only allowed to bring them in once a day.
Gotta go to class at Stanford.
Gotta go to class.
Yeah.
Gotta go to class, you gotta do the extracurriculars, you gotta do all this other stuff. So I couldn't bring them in multiple times a day, or it wouldn't be efficient for their day.
Right.
So then we just brought them in one time a day. And that's where I'm like, well, we can't do an hour long lifting and then a 3 hour practice.
Right.
Don't even have the time constraints for that. So then basically we turned it into a strength warm up. So we would train before. And then, so anyways, back to the microdosing model, you just want to follow what they're doing that day. If it's a game day, we're doing pretty explosive, powerful stuff. If it's a hard practice day, we're doing our more strength drives things. And then your sandwich days in between, we're doing a lot of accessory work to support the body and also, you know, pump out the lymphatic system and be able to recover.
You know, listening to you explain that, I just, the only thing that comes to my mind is like, duh. Like, really?
Right,
like,
right.
You know, but... because as you explain it, I'm like, this makes the most sense. Doing anything else would be just an effort to fit circumstances into your box and to do it the way you want it to be done. And it sounds like you, in an effort to be the best coach you can be and to meet athletes where they're at, you're prioritizing their needs and what makes sense over any personal philosophies or biases that you may have. So hats off to you.
I appreciate it.
I don't even know if that's a question. It's more of an acknowledgement.
Right. No, I appreciate that.
Of just something I'm recognizing.
Well, what happened though was, what indirectly happened is, we increased the training age of a normal college freshman to be almost a sophomore and junior by the time they were done with their season because of training frequency.
More exposure.
They're
like, just doing the thing more.
48 weeks, 5 days a week, like carry the one. That's a lot of sessions.
So the reality is, if you do things like complexes, you know, to teach athletes mm-hmm. and then general physical preparation, and then you use that to prime before you clean, snatch, jerk, or squat heavy, whatever. Well, man, just the motor learning and skill acquisition research will tell you softer, more often exposures generally lead to learning faster.
Yeah.
So they became more competent as weightlifters earlier. Thus, we're able to train their increase their training age to a sophomore, junior by the time they're done as a freshman. So how much more advanced can we get in a short period of time, especially when we're in this day and age of transfer portal, NIL deals and all that? Guys are moving on. So now we're actually getting some competency because you're getting reps at it. It's common sense.
Yeah.
If you only do 2 lifting sessions a week and you're a freshman,
not gonna get that.
It's not gonna be kind of tough, right. Especially if you're playing. It's gonna be kind of tough.
Yeah, playing, practicing.
100%. So that's where you're getting a lot. You're doing a lot for the body that just makes sense. And it's all premised in skill acquisition, motor learning, physiology. I mean, when we take medicine for our body, Do we take the biggest doses possible twice a week? No, we generally spread it out to every morning, twice a day you do this, because it makes it an easier, more digestible with less side effects. If you are truly training for strength and hypertrophy and all these performance metrics as the season goes, and you only do it 1 to 2 times a week, how sore, how much soreness are you probably going to induce? How much are you disturbing their system that's going to disturb movement or disturb skill, which is the sport?
Right.
And so now your sessions are becoming more important, more dominant than the game you are preparing for.
Right.
So
yeah, what are we doing?
And if you do the other, where you're not training hard enough, then you're regressing.
Right.
So who's really doing the disservice?
Yeah.
You know?
We talk about, you know, blending the weight room in with the court. I think one of my favorite things that I see from you is game days. So can you describe a game day for a high minute player and then a game day for like your developmental guys? Like everything from, you know, your warm-ups before the games, lifts before the games, and things you do after.
For sure. Yeah. So we have a, we'll call it a voluntary model, right? So everything's voluntary, right? You guys can come whenever you want. But the good thing is we have a very like motivated group. Now, we stay within our hours and we do all the things that are necessary. But there's one aspect where it needs to be voluntary and we keep it voluntary. But with that being said, we start with our low minute development group in the morning. And what they're doing is they're playing because that is their game day. So they're not participating in the game at night, but for them to develop and to stay sharp, they need to play the game. So they do, with our player development, KJ, once again, awesome. They do all these unbelievably fun games that are competitive as can be, and they're offensive and defensive advantage-based basketball. So for example, 4-on-3 scramble situations, got to solve.
So fun, dude.
Oh, it's fun. He makes it so much fun. And then if we don't have that, then we just legitimately play 4-on-4 or 3-on-3.
Yeah.
And we have GAs and we have managers, we have, and it's like a professional, like an NBA environment, which is awesome. And prior to that, that's when we do our speed-based training program. So if we play 2, sometimes 3 times a week, I mean, very rare, but 2 times a week, we'll do one or the other. We'll do sprinting in some form or fashion with contextual movements with that. And then, or we'll do more vertical based things. So we'll do jumping, or actually no, we throw in a lot of change of direction as well. But what we do is we theme the day based off what they're about to do. If they're going to go into some like hard 3-on-3, well, the greatest thing about 3-on-3 is it's the most excel and decel that you can do on a basketball court because you have space.
You're talking about half court.
Half court, half yes. Court. Half yes. Court. Yes.
3-on-3, half court is my jam.
3-on-3, full court is conditioning.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
A totally different deal.
Every ball yeah.
But 3-on-3 in the half court, exactly, based off the data, suggests that it's unbelievably harsh excels and decels, which thus we will complement that with change of direction and like depth drops. We'll do a ton of what else would we do? We'll obviously have a strength component, so we'll go some heavy single leg med ball throws, things of that nature. But the reality is we are inducing and we are complementing that session. Then when we roll into our shoot around, which is generally early evening, then I'll have the high minute players and we're only doing movement literacy. So in other words, it's basically exposing them to the movements that they're not getting through training or through practice.
Nice.
So that's where, you know, it's a little bit more slower paced, but it's movement exploration. It's different vectors, med balls, bands, all sorts of stuff like that, that will complement their movement strategies. So it's very low taxing, low CNS. I would say—
Do you maybe, do a lot of floor-based stuff with that?
Like the animal stuff?
Yeah, like crawling, rolling,
stuff. We do that every day no matter what.
Got it. Yeah.
Every day.
I've just, in my mind when you're talking about that, I was like, I bet he layers that stuff in there.
You got to.
Literally every day.
You got to.
He lives on the floor.
We live on the floor. We're babies.
They need it.
We're all babies.
So who, yeah, we're all just big,
big old babies.
Big babies. Yeah.
And then they'll go into their, you know, shoot around where they're getting prepped for the game. And then we go into our warm-ups. And our warm-ups are kind of fun. It's a lot of the human aspect and the crawling and a lot of close chain activities. But Zach's seen a lot of what we've done. It's kind of wild. Like we do some water bag work where it's, now I'll always say this, never go full Bosch.
Don't go full Bosch.
Never go full Bosch, right? But if
I
you
had
look-
to rein him in for a little bit.
If you looked over to the side, it gets a little Bosch.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're like, oh, that's a little, but I will say this. if you do that for 30 some games in the NBA, we did it almost, or actually we did it every game. They had their own routine. But if you add the water bag stuff, you add any of the things that will, from a perturbation standpoint, increase your software, then that's going to complement the hardware work. And it's low taxing on the CNS and it's low taxing on the system, but the motor learning aspect to it. So joint centration, all these things that we want from a health perspective, which obviously if you have high health, you'll hopefully have high performance.
Yeah.
You're just opening up the window for opportunity for high outputs. So that's basically what we're doing. We're just opening up the window so you can go rob the house.
Nice.
And that's what we're looking for. And that's in those sessions. So we do the water bag routine and then we actually get a heavy ball. And we do a lot of quote unquote, and you know, we can go down the rabbit hole if it's sport specific and what that means, but we get them through extreme ranges of motion and we build up from low force, low velocity to high force, high velocity. So you can see a mixture of almost like track and field like things, but with a basketball. And then if you keep going down the layers, it looks more and more like the game. And then boom, go play the game. So then after the game, our high minute players voluntarily come in and we do a lot of eccentrics and isometrics, heavy eccentrics, heavy isometrics. The reason why you want to do that, the game day is going to be high. So it better be high across the board. Mm-hmm. I can't take them and do a heavy lift later on the next day because that means it's two high days. So our goal is whatever their high day is, we're going to get their high stress that day in the weight room as well.
So what would a typical post lift look like?
For sure.
So I think people probably think it's like a 30-minute thing, but it's pretty short. So what things do you try to knock out?
If it's longer than 12 to 15 minutes, I messed up.
Yeah.
Wow.
If it's longer than that, I truly messed up because they're unbelievably warm.
Got it.
So
they're ready to go already.
They're ready to go. And the good thing is,
okay, I see.
You know, their work capacity is really high because, yeah. Like, have you ever had a guy leave a game and with their hands on their knees and like, no, like. The game's over. Okay. They're usually celebrating in the locker room.
Right. Literally giving an interview.
When you see some plyometrics in the locker room after a game, you go, yeah, they're okay. We can do more work. And that's okay. Like more work is okay. But now with that being said, the off days have got to be low because you got to complement. If you're having a high peak, you got to match it with an evenly lower peak. So an example of a post-game lift, we focus primarily on the areas that we think are going to be affected the most, which is hamstrings, gastric soleus, and then quads, right? So you'll see some version of a Nordic, you'll see some version of a heavy hinge, you'll see some version of a heavy squat, and then we're taking care of the tendons to the best of our ability, and we're going single leg isos, like a split squat iso, foot and ankle iso positions like Calditza stuff.
Yeah.
Because we want heavy loads and you don't see nothing faster explosive on those days. It's all heavy eccentrics and heavy isometrics.
Do you look at it from the sense of like, well, if they just played a game, they got the fast dynamic set, like,
yes.
And to make it potent, make it effective, make it useful, that's kind of the end of the spectrum you're left with.
1,000%.
Hit that hard.
Like, look at it as like a pie chart. If you have a pie chart and you have all your physical qualities that you're trying to achieve, mm-hmm. like people will forget that the game itself is a physical stressor and a stimulus.
Totally. It's the stimulus.
They forget that. they consolidate this like, well, okay, we got the sprint workout. We need to sprint. No, they sprinted in the game.
Yeah,
a lot.
A lot. And if you're, you know, a higher end program where you can have access to catapults, Connexon, GPS data, then you can quantify how much and know how much you need to feel or not feel.
Yeah.
And so, but let's just say like, hey, we're just going to say, we're going to use minutes. Okay. He played 26 minutes. He played 30 minutes. He probably got enough XLD cells. We're probably pretty good. So now they hit that high velocity, super high force, high velocity spectrum or quadrant, if you will. Shout out to Daniel Bove.
Shout out to Bove.
And then now you got to work the other end of the spectrum, which is slow force, like heavy tendon. Let that thing creep. Like,
yeah. Let that thing creep. Let that tendon get a little creepy, baby.
Creep.
Yeah. I love a creepy tendon.
Man, same. The older I get, the more creepy I got to be. Creepy tendons, man. Just keep my tendons away from playgrounds. That's a soundbite. I think we just achieved a soundbite.
We're clipping that.
clipping that.
Yeah.
So with these like post game lifts, like everyone's always like, well, how do you get basketball players to lift? Like, how'd you go about getting these players besides just being like, we did this in the NBA? Like, right. I'm a college strength coach and I'm trying to implement what you're doing. How would I go about, you know, telling this player who just played 40 minutes, so let's go hit some Nordics and some ISOs?
I mean, let's first talk about how do we get NBA players to do it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was crazy. That was
probably harder.
That was crazy. There was like spotty experiences that I've heard from years prior where there was a post game lift or two. But as far as an organizational like movement, like this is what we're doing, I would proudly say that that came from the Suns. Like that was what we installed when we were there.
Do you think you were able to do that? Because it's like a younger program.
At that, so that was the beautiful part about it. Like we had a young organization. We had young players.
Yeah.
And for us, we just used great character. Like if you're a good dude and you actually care, when I present an option for you, you're probably going to assume that I have the best interest at heart for you. Thus, more than likely going to do it.
Yeah.
And we, our department, like we were so embedded with the player's best interest and it just bled. Like they felt it and they're like, dude, these guys are here for us. Like they actually care. And we showed it in so many ways that it was not hard at all to say, hey, you ready to get this lift in?
Yeah.
After they played 40 minutes. The reason why is like, you just put it in very simple terms. You have the care factor and then you put it in ways that make them go, oh, that other option is terrible. So for example, in a 3.5 game per week average season, you're literally playing every other day and then you got to go travel. So then you go, hey, we got to get this lift in tomorrow on a practice day. Here's the deal though. We got to fly to Toronto. We got to get off the plane. We're at the hotel. Probably a good idea to get it at the hotel. Or would you rather go sleep when we get there? Because if we knock this 10 minute lift out real quick, we ain't got to worry about that one tomorrow.
Seems like a good deal.
Yeah.
Seems like a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
And then you bring them in.
Find that.
And go, okay, this, and it just, now it's like, oh, this is our routine. This is what we do. And we train before games too. You know, the reality of the NBA season, what we did with a lot of athletes is we actually trained 3 times a day because we had four opportunities to lift. So we'd have shoot around in the morning, pre or post that. And then you have pre-game and post-game. So that's 4 opportunities.
Oh.
But if we do these little, so we did microdosing in college, whereas once a day in professional, we could do it 2 to 3 times a day. And their routines became a part of that because that means our high days are super high and our low days are completely off. And that was the beautiful part about it. And what we would do, you do accessories in the morning because you're trying to, because it's not going to be a crazy shoot around, right?
Feel good.
Just warm up, feel good. And then once again, all about blood flow. You have a lot of blood flow, you have a lot of healing. So it'd be low CNS accessory work in the morning. Mm-hmm. Then pregame.
Get a good pump. You know?
I mean, who doesn't want a good pump?
Everyone wants that.
I mean, come on.
Let's be real.
It feels great. And then we go pregame, and that's all the skill acquisition, motor learning, and a pinch of power and speed.
Nice.
Just a pinch. You know, we had some dudes legit like flying 20s and stuff, or flying 10s, if you will, because of basketball court.
Sure.
And then depth drops. We did a lot of depth drops pre-game. I mean, nothing's going to get you ready to handle 6 times body weight, single leg lands, than actually doing that before the game.
Can I rabbit hole you real quick?
Please.
What do you say to people who say you shouldn't do plyos in season? Or because I see that a lot.
What type of plyos are you talking about when you're talking about depth drops? Is it like a compliant drop? Is it a rigid drop? Like,
yeah. Oh, this is definitely a rabbit hole. Okay, we'll just book.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
We're going to bookmark that one.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So this comes to individualization, right? Just like how we'd individualize exercise selection, rather front squat, back squat, Zercher squat, single leg squat, whatever for that individual. When you have super tendinous guys, and I'm assuming people understand what I mean by that. That means they have small ranges of motion in their counter movement jump because they're super stiff and they elicit a lot of force. So in other words, they're your actual good basketball players, right?
Yeah,
they're bouncy, they're stiff, and they're able
elastic.
Let's throw them all out there.
Yes.
So those are your athletes that they're like, they look like deers, right? They like they're super stiff. So if we're prescribing plyos for them, the game is harsh enough plyos for them. So I don't need to do stiff work with them. So in the other end of the spectrum, just like we do the other end of the spectrum on strength, we're going to do compliant landings. I want them falling off a depth, but I want them to yield and get full range of motion, because they're not getting that in sport. Because now that is healthy plyometrics, which a lot of people only look at plyometrics from the performance standpoint.
Stiffness.
Right. Exactly. Plyometrics is health. Yeah. And yet, and I've done a ton of return to play protocols, and you won't believe how fast we get into plyometrics.
Yep.
But there's a way to do it. There's open chain plyometrics, which is super light, but you're working on rate coding. You're working on muscle recruitment. You're working on these speed components, because what's the first thing to go? Speed. Second thing to go, power.
Yep.
Third thing to go, strength. Fourth thing to go, conditioning, right? Capacity. Guys, it's the same. Yeah. It's the same. And that's where you have all these tools that allow you to do these things. But back to the rabbit hole. The stiff guys, we do more compliant stuff in season. And if I really need a lot of force from them, just so happen, we can get that another, we can actually just sprint.
Yeah.
Sprint's the number one deal. So probably that. And then you can soften it with medicine ball throws or trap bar work or whatever, cleans.
Are there cues you're thinking with that too? Is the communication relaxed?
Yes.
Soft.
Yes.
This is a big melt into the ground.
Oh, I love melt. Melt is one of my favorite.
Let your foot melt.
Are you familiar with Matt Watson?
Yes.
Okay. So as you're speaking, I'm thinking of what he classifies as deep tier stuff.
The deep tier, man, we do that every day in our warm-ups.
I love that.
And shout out to Matt.
Shout out to Matt.
I don't know him personally, but we've like exchanged.
Yes.
And I'm like, bro, you're brilliant. Like,
he is.
You're absolutely brilliant.
He is.
And that's like back to the 10, like plyometrics can be health. And return to play. All the deep tier stuff, that's introductory stuff.
Yeah.
Like
should be.
In return to play protocols, that's introductory stuff. And that's a foundation of all physical preparation to me, is because it's lower force, but speed component is going to elicit the tendon response other than super heavy overcoming or yielding isos. So anyways, now you're compliant guys. So I would consider the guys who can't create force fast
or skill player,
muscularly driven. Those are the guys we're going to get a little stiffer with.
Yeah.
We're going to say, all right, you're going to depth drop and you're going to land as.
Are we talking more of a Jokic? You know, like a
big
bigger wide body.
Big body, a
Buick. You know what I mean?
An old Buick LeSabre.
Yes, sir. Hey, I totaled a Buick LeSabre once. It had 22-inch rims on it. And every little bump I went over, bottom out into the wheel
well. Just so you know, you're the coolest person I know. Now,
and it wasn't mine. It was my brother's. I totaled it while my brother was in jail. The story gets dark.
I really hope that it was like that light champagne brown color. Like it wasn't like a blue, black, or red.
It was green.
Ooh, even better.
Yeah.
Because money.
It's like a dark green.
It was dark green.
Yeah. Oh, you had that forest green?
It was a forest green.
So you had some class with your trash.
Yeah, that's right. Well, no, trust me. It was all trash.
Okay.
Yeah.
Respect.
We've come a long way.
And then, I mean, just to fill the gap of what they don't need. It goes back to the same conversation we were having earlier. Give them what they don't have, especially in season, because that's they're doing their superpower every day. And I think a lot of us forget about if their superpower is, elasticity, then every step they take, every movement they make, bars, they're doing that. Right?
Yeah.
They're doing that. So they are actually going to gas out faster because neurologically, bro, they're trashing themselves because that's who they are. That's why they're so special.
Yeah.
So you got to give them the things that they don't have. Same thing with the muscularly driven guys. They might look great with their shirt off, but they don't produce force fast. So then,
I don't know if I look
mediocre
great
on both sides.
Yeah.
But I'm a great above average on all of this.
Same
average.
Except for the intelligence.
This podcast is just three above average dudes.
That's it. Three above average dudes
doing
the pod.
And a very hot, just in case anyone's wondering, if you're watching this, we're all sweating.
The air
conditioning is about as efficient as that Buick LeSabre I totaled.
Yeah. This is mental tough.
Not working right now.
This is mental tough.
All right, back on track. Anyway,
go ahead.
You first.
Really good one.
Oh yeah,
this one's fire.
I'm gonna judge this one. Then here we go.
Fire off with the tendon guys, muscularly driven guys. We talked about plyometrics. What do you change in the weight room? Are you like a tendon guy needs to do more muscularly driven stuff to make them average and the
right?
Opposite? Like, what do you do?
So I always go back and forth on this because I always think it's context dependent, right? So if you got a guy who's super bouncy, I mean, that's their superpower, but they can't sustain their self on the court physically because they're just, they don't have enough weight.
Yeah.
Like simply, it's just too physical of a game. Then, okay, maybe we steer away from their superpower, because if they're jumping 60 to 62 centimeters, which is unbelievable on a, mm-hmm. on a force plate, and we get them to 57, but they're now carrying around 20 to 30 more pounds of lean body mass.
Right.
That's still a superpower. It's just flying. It's a gorilla flying through the air, right? 100%. Like, so that's when you got, oh, okay, I can lose a superpower to gain this, because the overall effect is going to be impactful.
It's a net positive.
A great way to put it.
And you're also, something I picked up is you're still tying it back into the skill. The play is always, it's first. That's first.
100%.
So you're not afraid of saying like, look, like, yeah, okay, you might lose a little bounce.
Right.
But you're getting bodied on every play. 100%. You can't even get to the rack. You're getting moved off your position. And if someone wants to drive on you, they can't.
Tim's posting you up.
So you're exactly.
Wait, we can't have that.
So your superpower is not a superpower anymore. It's only selectively expressed when you're in open space, which if you're in a competitive basketball game with high level stakes, you don't get that opportunity very often. That's why it's called the top 10 on SportsCenter for a reason.
Fact.
It don't happen often. So when you see that windmill dunk in open space or whatever, it's special.
Yeah.
That's why you don't see it every game. And that's where, that's such a good question, Zach.
That was a fire question.
I just kind of wanted to
know. But when you're when you're 17 to 21, you can just go strength and take care of most buckets. Like
totally.
More lean body mass generally means more strength. And that also gives you that positive power output.
Yeah.
But when you're older, And that's where I want to go back to the context portion. When you're older, that tends to change. That tends to change because when you have to go to that well, that five sets of five on back squat that got you strong in the first place, you're going back to those loads. How long does it take you to recover from that? Unless you're supplementing, and we don't need to go into that conversation, but those, you know, that's the reality. That's the reality. It taxes you more when you're older, even though you go hit what you hit when you're 26, 22,
right.
But it takes you a lot more to recover. Thus, if you're a high performer and have to entertain the nation or the world and play 3.5 times a week, mm-hmm. you don't have that kind of capacity.
When I hear you say that, two things come to mind. One, so your training age is older, you're older, perhaps not able to recover as well as you did when you're 18, right? That's kind of like duh.
Yeah, duh.
And in my mind, another thing that I feel like runs parallel to that is if you're closer to your ceiling.
Yes.
Inherently.
Yes.
So anything that you do, is it being closer to your ceiling, is inherently going to be more demanding, more taxing. So you've got this double-edged sword where you're certainly not getting younger, you're getting older, it's harder to recover, and more than likely it's like Icarus, you know, it's like you're flying close to the sun,
not to get burned,
doing everything.
So then how do you combat that?
Efficiency.
And that's where skill comes in, and that's where I'm telling you, when you see it you can't unsee it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you watch NBA basketball every night for 4 years, I mean, that's and luckily, I got some incredible experiences. Were you able to win a Western Conference Finals? I was able to be in the finals. Losing in the finals was still one of the coolest accomplishments of my life.
Totally.
It was still amazing just to stand on top of Everest, even though we didn't dominate it.
Yeah.
Still got to stand up there, and it was just very cool to see the best basketball in the world at one time. It was incredible. But when you see it, you can't unsee it, and then you're seeing the aging athletes, and when you see their physical development, not what they used to be, then all of a sudden, IQ and skill start really taking over.
Yeah.
And a good example, Michael Jordan.
Yep.
Vince Carter, another great example.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, their bounce was incredible, but what happened? They became more skillful because it's aging.
It just had to happen.
And their IQ went up.
Yep.
And their shooting got better. And their ability to get to their spots. I mean, these are two really good examples. And that's where training allows you to be able to get to that age.
Yes.
And I think people forget that. Like Allen Iverson, he's my favorite example of this. You know, the guy makes the jokes about being allergic to the weight room or, you know, mm-hmm. I don't lifting weights. That shit's heavy. I ain't trying to do that. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, you're right.
Yeah. Listen,
fair.
Not
wrong. When you're that guy, I agree.
Yeah.
But I think he could have had three more like peak years
mm-hmm.
if he would have just had general physical. Not crazy.
Yep.
You know,
it's funny you bring that up. we had that same conversation around football players about, you know, they have this whole season that you totally detrain in the, and it's different from organization to organization, how much in season training they get.
Yeah.
But then the off season rolls around, and for a lot of guys, they just don't train for large periods of time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you see the injuries go up in all sports, right? And and it's pretty catastrophic. And I'm close to guys that are a part of that,
mm-hmm.
but it's the game too.
Facts.
Like, people forget that portion, the pace of play. We want more scores. We want more touchdowns. We make rules to allow more this, more that.
Right.
You got a different athlete now.
Yeah.
And you wonder why these things happen. And then players' associations get involved. And now you can't be around the team as often.
Seriously.
But you need. I mean, come on, guys. What are we talking about?
Yep.
Like, don't fight for things that are a short-term benefit that's right. going to have your long-term career.
Yeah.
And then the ones that keep, that are serious and pay top dollar for their training offseason, it shows.
Yeah, it does.
It absolutely shows. Shout out to Tim.
Thank you.
Shout out to Tim.
I appreciate that.
Do you, we talk about like these aging athletes. Do you think the new crop of like college basketball players you get like have more mileage on them compared to like 10, 15 years ago, just because of the crazy summer, spring, high school seasons? Like, I feel like these were getting like cars with 150,000 miles on them compared to, you know, 10 years ago even.
I would say absolutely. I mean, AAU is, you know, everyone wants to blame AAU, and I'm with you. Like, I get it. You know, they're playing three games by noon, you know, on a weekend, and then they're eating Doritos in between, and all right, let's
hot Sunday Doritos.
We got three more games on Sunday, you know, and it's a game based model, just like the NBA, opposed to a practice based model. But if we're really looking at the NBA, man, if you did a first team All International versus a first team All American, I really think first team International is going to win.
Yeah, it's
because tough. Their skill development is so much higher than ours. I mean, you got a Luka, you got a Jokic, you got Shea, you got these guys from international backgrounds. Their development's quite different. And it's really cool. One of the coolest experiences of my career was my first year at the Suns. One of the top assistant coaches, his name is Darko. And this guy is now the head coach of the Toronto Raptors. I'm not sure which Eastern Bloc country he's from.
I was about to say with a name like Darko.
I feel terrible. I wish I should know this, brother. I'm sorry if you're listening to this. I doubt you are. But the thing is, when we talked about, you know, how is coaching and the development of coaching overseas, it's basketball school. And I was like, what do you mean school? And he goes, no. To coach at sport, you have to go to school at coaching a sport. And I learned about anatomy and physiology, biomechanics and kinesiology first.
Wow.
I go, wait, you're a sport coach? And we are having the same conversation about physics and biomechanics.
Makes your job a lot easier.
Physiology. It's just, what can you get accomplished when you're speaking the same language like
totally.
That?
Totally.
Yeah.
And that's where, for him, he's one of the coolest experiences that I had in the NBA, just experiencing coffee and conversations with him, because I've never met a sport coach who understood the body as much as him. And I'm like, wow. Imagine what models you could build from that.
Seriously.
Like sustainable models, not just, oh, we got a couple of guys here and there, and that's the reason why we're successful.
Right.
You know, like, no, that's sustainability of high success.
You know, one thing I've seen from you talking about reminds me of the next question I want to ask, actually. So when I first saw you, it was the kettlebell passes.
Oh yes.
This is a while ago, bro.
Just so you know, that was the highlight of my career still.
That was like, awesome.
That was it.
Pretty good. Like, that and the drop lunge.
But can we also talk about
the drop lunge was big time.
The drop lunges with the kettlebell too. So something I've noticed is this goes back to what I think I mentioned earlier, where you seem more interested in what works. than anything else.
Yes.
And there are some principles from afar I've noticed. You love to explore rhythm, timing, pace.
Yep.
Almost always seem to have a role in what you're doing. And again, this is an outsider perspective. So if I'm wrong, check me.
No, this is
but,
great.
Can you talk about your creativity, how it's impacted your coaching, and some of those principles maybe I just touched on and where they intertwine?
For sure. That's an awesome question. I will say this. The birth of creativity comes from an environment of necessity.
Totally.
And like a great example is the kettlebell partner passing. So I was introduced to it by these hippie dudes, and they're cool as can be out in California, right? And to me, I was like, okay, this is just novel, right? Yeah. Like, it's circus bells, like, it's, you're throwing implements back and forth. I mean, how meathead is that? It's dope, right?
Yeah.
I didn't think about the physical qualities that you could get from it. I didn't think about the performance aspects to it until I tore my Achilles. And when I tore my Achilles, I'm like, oh man, like, I can't do plyometrics. I can't move well. But man, could I get jacked as can be, right? So all upper body, awesome. And then when I look down at my foot, I'm like, I am a size and a half down in shoe size because of how much atrophy of the foot, because you're not loading the foot.
That's wild.
So when I first was able to get out of my boots and I started walking, I was slipping out of my shoes. It blew me away. I was like, oh, wow. And my foot is like that super pes canvas, like that really high arching foot, right? And then I have those, you know, I think it's called Halgen's or Halden's deformities, where it's that basically that heel spur off the back, which sets me up phenomenally for change of direction. Woo! I mean, wow.
This but another level.
I mean, wow. Like, I can get around some dudes.
Big paws. Big paws.
But the But the thing that I was missing in my training was, how do I get high eccentric rate of force development? Because that's how you increase the ability to hopefully jump higher. And I can't leave the ground because it's plyometrics. I can't do depth drop landings, like high velocity eccentric, because once again, I can't jump off of anything or I can't land. But the kettlebell partner passing, and for those that who don't know what it looks like, it's essentially, it looks like a kettlebell swing, but you're throwing it to another person. You're literally passing it and you land in this squatty deadlifting position. You receive the bell and then you throw it like a kettlebell swing back. That is high eccentric RFD, and I don't have to leave the ground.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm like, oh, I can get that out of it. And then we start doing that. My glutes are blown up. My hamstrings are blown up. My foot is growing. I'm like, oh, this is so much force. This is way more force than I'm getting with a deadlift. So as soon as I got access to force plates, I started realizing heavy grinding, one rep, two rep, three rep maxes weren't actually the amount of tonnage or force than plyometrics or partner passing or high velocity eccentrics. And so you're seeing some great things out there like Bove with Takeoff. Great book. I highly recommend it. Daniel Bove with the Pelicans. Takeoff is a great example of him basically doing every exercise you can imagine on force plates and programming them. And it's dope. It's so dope. It's God, so dope.
What a coach's coach.
I mean, dude.
That is awesome.
And he set it up for everybody. So you don't even have to have force plates anymore. You know, you really don't. Other than monitoring.
Right.
But now you can prescribe training based off of his results. And I was like, brilliantly done. Great job. But that's what I found. I was like, all right, we're going to kettlebell partner pass on force plates.
Yes.
And I was scared to death because if that kettlebell fell on force plates.
$40,000.
See what happened here was.
See what happened.
Yeah. Man, we were doing research.
I was just going to blame it on an intern and call it a day.
100%. Yeah, heck yeah.
But the force that it was creating was crazy. And I'm like, oh, and I got back faster. I played one-on-one 5.5 months post-op.
That's nuts.
Because my goal is to get there as fast as possible. I'm like, sure. All right, this is now a project. But the creativity, once again, it came from necessity. And Santa Clara, I didn't have anything. I mean, bro, the 49ers were giving me gym equipment. So I had, quote unquote, new gym equipment. So we had to do some crazy things just to train, right? UAB, same deal. I get access to actually really good athletes for the first time.
Yeah.
And I start realizing that, oh man, they are not good athletes. They're just good basketball players. So I need to go back. And that's where all the tumbling, the crawling, the quote unquote human stuff came from, because it was to build a base of physical education that they didn't have growing up. And that stuck. And I kept that because we're running into the same problem today. They play basketball. That's all they do. They never interact with the ground. And when they fall, they get broke. And that's where you add these physical literacy components to it, and hopefully you get better athletes. But yeah, the creativity aspect. Oh, and boredom. Absolute boredom.
Totally.
I can't watch 5x5 back squats more than like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Like, I can't just can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, can't do it.
Jake, I was on a podcast, Jake Tora, just the other day. It was like, he was talking about how coaches It's like, you don't need to change the program so frequently. The athletes aren't getting bored. It's you getting bored. And Jake goes, exactly.
Absolutely.
I'm fucking bored.
Absolutely.
I'm done.
It's hard to watch. And then, like, there's certain aspects that should never leave a program.
Right.
Right. Speed, some form of strength. But the vessel it's delivered in.
Body doesn't know.
Body doesn't know, man.
Body doesn't know.
And this is where.
Let that tendon creep.
Dude, let that thing creep. But the thing that's crazy is, like, we get fixated on these movements that we think are simple.
Yeah.
But when you take giraffes and say, hey, put a bar on your back, it's a little different story. And that's where, I mean, you want to talk about evolution. I went from a weightlifting hall, snatch, clean, jerk, blah, 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 to machines.
Bro, you beat me to it. I was just about to ask a question.
You already knew it was coming.
It's on the way. Coming in hot. So look, so as coaches, it's like, okay, so I got to get this guy to back squat because that's what I do. So I'm going to make sure their heels are elevated. I'm going to set up all these constraints to accomplish this task. Or
I could throw them on a hack squat.
You could.
Pendulum squat. Leg press. They all work.
Pendulum squat around 10.
Listen, I've got the NFL offseason guys, especially the longer limb dudes, that we don't even touch a bar. They're on the pendulum squat.
It just makes sense.
Thank you.
And the reality is, once again, you're talking about NFL, NBA.
Yep.
High level division one.
Yep.
The skill comes at high velocity. It does not come at slow force. So what I mean by that is sprinting, jumping, change of direction, all high velocity, all highly skill-based movements. Mm-hmm. Why do I need to do that with a barbell?
Well, if you bring the force up, then the velocity also goes up.
You're right, if you're weak as piss.
Right.
But when
right,
you're dealing right. with, like, I've been fortunate to be around some NFL players that yeah. are just unreal, and you go, well, force isn't the issue.
Not at all.
You know, then yeah. it's like, and that's when you go, okay, Bosh. Like,
yeah,
Bosh-esque, because now, like, that's where I like the water bag sprinting, or I like the contextual sprinting with a rib and hip disassociation and creating problems for them to solve at high velocities, because we're trying to expand their bandwidth of athleticism, problem solving, and reactivity, which is dun 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 the game. it's a safe way yeah. of training that the game, which yeah. is what we're here to do, not here to post on social, which, don't get me wrong, I do it, I get it, hey. But the reality is,
do what has to be done.
You know, like, I see the crazy heavy back squats that, like, Derrick Henry or some of these other dudes do. Mm-hmm. That's in spite of. That's just like, yeah. it's in spite of. And good on them. Saquon, good on you guys.
Yes.
Like, that's awesome. But you don't even need to live there anymore.
Right.
And the more we think about, like, fluid dynamics and physics, when we think about compounding that spine, mm-hmm. when we talk about high velocity, high speed, that spine needs to be rigid and it needs to be relaxed at the same time, but in different areas. And then it's a piano key, baby. Like, you are playing like Elton John all the way up and down these joints.
Bars.
And you're striking keys at certain time to get more propulsion. Mm-hmm. And then you're relaxing to let that leg swing through. And then boom, we're hitting that key again. Like, that's what we're trying to create. When you double down on compressive strategies like deadlifting, back squatting, whatever, don't get me wrong, good vessels for yeah. compression. But when you live there
yeah.
and you just keep compounding that, and then once you get to that point where those big jumps, so this is when I turn off heavy movements. When all of a sudden it takes me 2 to 3 weeks to get them up 10 to 15 pounds.
Mm.
It's like, if I'm just fighting for like change of
plates. Forcing it.
When I'm fighting for change plates, I cut it out. I go, we're there. That is the strength that you need. Let's find strength in a new way.
Particularly if you're already strong, right?
More and more so even if you are strong.
Right.
Then you just tap it.
Yep.
You tap
Let's
it
get this
and you
in
get
here
out.
And then we're out. I'm in and I'm out.
Get in, you get out, and you hope to God nothing bad happens. Like, I mean, like, we're back to like the PR days where you're like, all right, one rep max days. How much were we holding our breaths on those days?
Yeah.
But yet, that's what we do.
Worth it.
That's we need the PR board. We need this.
They made progress.
Yeah.
Coach.
Well, I'll tell you how. Coach.
Yeah.
Do low skill testing, because back squatting is a skill.
Yeah.
I don't care who you're talking to. Even a power lifter, it's a skill.
Any barbell lift. Like
any barbell yeah. lift. But you know what else? What's not a skill? Overcoming isometrics.
Right.
Day one, you could produce 2 to 3 times body weight. And so if you increase that, then guess what? You got stronger.
Yeah.
Significantly. It wasn't the skill. You didn't get better at the skill of squatting.
Yeah.
you got better at actually putting force into the ground, which is the whole purpose of what we do.
That's why, yeah, that's the leap you make to justify the squatting.
Exactly. Yeah. So what the thing that I try to do is I try to capture any metrics that I'm capturing.
Yeah.
With the exception of jumping and sprinting, I try to capture it with no skill. Like, if the more you remove skill, the more you show true progress.
Mm.
As soon as you start introducing skill as the testing measure,
totally,
that's when you start going, well, they just became more efficient, or did they put more force into the ground?
Right.
For instance, like your 40-yard dash guys, some of them probably didn't need to get that much stronger. They just need to get better at starts.
Yeah.
100%. Period. And then there you go.
Listen, I feel like a lot of the stuff, it's like it doesn't get talked about openly, or it's kind of gate kept. It's like the guys did better at the 40 because they practiced running a 40 for six freaking weeks.
Absolutely. I mean, I'd hope I get better at the 40. I mean, listen, even me as a D trainer.
And it's like, yeah, it's like, you mean to tell me a guy that was a 5-star athlete, started in a top 10 program for 3 years in a row, ran, sprinted 2 to 3 times a week for 6 weeks and got faster?
Hey, I got
rested after the season.
Oh my God. And
rested after the season. Yeah. That's the best one.
Yeah.
You were put into a bubble where we did anything we could to not hurt you. Yeah. Right. But we're going to get those outputs, but you're not going to go combat with anybody.
Yep.
And then, oh, here's the stars in alignment scenario with the whole world watching you do one thing. I think you're going to get an output.
Crush.
Yeah. I think or you're going to pull a hamstring, which that's.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yes. So I forgot, like, there's track and field coaches that almost subscribe to that kind of model. Like, you try to break them because then you know their threshold. And then that's when you reverse engineer.
Their, oh, wow. That's fascinating.
Yeah. It's like they, like, if you're doing
it. I would never survive that model.
If you're doing
it. I'd break too quick.
But if you're doing like an Olympic cycle.
Right.
I mean, who cares about the world championships? You're trying to win
right.
the Olympics.
Yeah.
So you got 4 years. So they'll do like year one. All right. Like.
Freaking go.
We're gonna probably pop your hamstring.
Right.
Just know that. Like, we're okay with that.
We gotta take you, we gotta find out what we're working with.
Exactly. And then I've seen, like, now this could be all like hearsay, but like the Chinese weightlifting team, like, I think their GPP is, no, you have to throw up before you leave.
Oh wow.
With that kind of volume.
Right.
And then, oh, you adapted to that. Now you're ready to train.
Bad news. It worked really well for you.
Right? Yeah. I mean, like, now it could be hearsay, but yeah. I've heard rumors of that type of stuff. And you go, you know, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Is it moral? That's a whole nother discussion. But right. if you're in like team sports, you can never pull off anything like that because that's not the sport.
Right.
You know, it's not maximally putting on the earth on your back and manipulating yourself around it, which could actually kill you.
Yeah.
Like, that's a totally different game. Right. But basketball doesn't. No.
Can I ask you something? So particularly at the pro level, you have athletes who's like, they want to do this thing because it makes them feel good and they want to do it.
We're doing it.
Thank you.
We're doing it. Here's why. There's the psychological component is greater than any physical stress I could ever give them. And so
preach.
When I have, like, that was the cool thing about the NBA is, like, I had new guys almost every other month, damn sure every other year.
Yeah.
Right, or every year. I mean, you got 7 to 8 new dudes. The franchise players are the only ones that really stay.
Yeah.
You know? So they all come from other good coaches. And so the coolest part about the NBA is I'm not a coach anymore. I am your assistant.
Mm.
I'm your assistant in the world of strength or human performance.
I'm your go-to.
I'm just your assistant. You tell me what you need.
Interesting.
And then here's how I've seen things, or here's how I think. But, like, you tell me. You are no one knows your body better than you, ever. Ever. No one would ever know what's going on internally. Did that, quote-unquote, have a positive experience or a negative experience? Corey, Zercher squats suck. I don't want to do them. All right, well, we're probably not going to get the intent to move the needle. So we're probably going to switch that.
Yep.
Corey, I really, really like front squats. Word? Okay. No pain. Looks good.
Yeah.
We could progressively overload it.
Yep. Tight.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares? It's not my training program. It's your training program. Mm. And I think we mix that up, and that's ego. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of ego. In all of my programs, there's a ton of autonomy. Like, I'll say prescribed power. Prescribed squat, prescribed hinge. And then it's a conversation. Hey, you want a goblet squat today?
Yeah.
You want a back squat today? Mm-hmm. What kind of squat do you want to do? And that becomes the quote unquote prescription.
Yeah. But Corey, that doesn't perfectly fit into a periodized model. It's not.
Have you played team
periodization
sports?
Periodization is dead.
Because there isn't. I mean, okay. There's a roundabout way of periodization is a thing.
Of course. But you know what people are thinking when they hear that.
I mean, I've worked with gold medal swimmers, and I've been happy to be involved with 12 world championships, mm-hmm. like from individual swimmers. That is when it matters.
Yeah.
It's a stopwatch sport. It's a yes or no. Did the training make you faster? Did it not?
Facts.
But in team sports, too many variables.
Yeah.
You can't. So you just progressively overload. And when you look at all your metrics and at the end of the year, if it has a positive swoop, you did your job.
Yeah, you nailed it.
A lot of guys come in and like give an example of like a lower body strength day of like the prescriptions you'll give these guys and kind of the conversations of when they come in telling you what they feel good. This hurts. That hurts. Like, how do you go from there?
How about this, Zach? We're going to do a little role play.
Ooh,
all right. Nice. So, all right. Actually, both of you guys. All right. You're both my athletes. Hi. All right. You guys had two totally different body types.
Okay.
Obviously. Right. So we can really get into what this could look like. You're tall. You're average.
Dude.
But you're awesome.
Done.
You're not so awesome. Yeah. You're the awesomest. Okay. But so you guys walk in.
Okay.
All right. Hey, guys. It's a vertical day. All right. What I mean by vertical, we need to do all the things to make you jump higher. All right. And our goal for jumping higher is to get something heavy on you today. Now, with that being said, all right, we need to get to a certain volume, probably a certain level of rate of perceived exertion. Right. Mm-hmm. It needs to feel heavy. But number one thing, you got to walk out feeling better than you when you walked in. That's how we're doing this. Cool. Cool. All right. So, hey, we got 5x5 as a general baseline on our squats. What kind of squat do you want to do today, Tim? 3, 2, 1.
I want to go front squat.
Front squat. Awesome. We can stick with that 5x5. Now, let's just pretend you're novice, right? You're competent, but we won't go into like force velocity or anything like that. Cool. Front squat. Zach, your back's been
My
a little
back's
jacked
killing
up.
Me.
Okay. So we're probably going to go more unilateral. Now, we can use the Techno Gym Leg Press Rev for you to get
some
real.
I'd like to do the Techno Gym Leg Press Rev.
We can do the Techno Gym Leg Press Rev plug. shout out Noah. But what you would do there, okay, we're going to go single leg, okay? And what we're going to do, we're going to go 4, 8 to 10 reps. But as soon as the power starts going down, cut it, okay? And then let's go from there. Everybody cool?
Cool. Break. Cool.
Done.
Yeah.
That would be an example of how we pull this off. And because we're in team sport, because of practice and in games, situations change. And all of a sudden their ankle's jacked up.
Yeah.
Well, not going to be a lot of ankle bending, even though I need to quote unquote squat you.
Yeah.
So that's where like an old school Corey, I'd have been like, we're going to sumo box squat.
Right. Yeah,
hell yeah. We ain't going to bend those ankles, but we're going to bend that back.
So true though.
So what's on the menu for today, Corey? Spine.
Spine.
Spine. Heavy spine.
Spinal. Spinal is on the menu.
Shout out to Mike Tyson.
Shout out to spines everywhere.
That's pretty good. But that'd be a really good example. And then the power, this is my favorite because you can base it off their force plates. And that's when you go, you know what? You're the elastic guy. Mm-hmm. What kind of power makes you good? And I like hurdle hops. You know what? You're right. Like elastic, like that actually makes sense. There's a reason why you like that because you perform really well at it.
So good at it.
And when you see, you know, the walk-ons beside me and trying to do it and they fall over the hurdles, but when you do it, it's kind of easy.
Yeah.
You're right. Let's do that. Do that one. Okay. And then the walk-ons. This is what you got. Medicine ball throws.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Throw the thing as hard as you can.
Just eat the ball and stay out of the way for a while.
Just get a, you know, you'll get a good stressor. It's good. Yeah. But, you know, there's levels to this.
Yeah.
And we want to fit your level. And so that'd be an example of that.
Should we get some Q&A from our lovely listeners?
Yeah,
on
I think
Instagram?
We should probably dive into it. So look, we're nearing the end. We've got some segments.
Boo.
This first segment
brought to you by
brought to you by the sponsor we don't have yet.
Yes.
Yes. But Zach, you want to kick us off?
Yeah. So this is from Darian.raw. Is that a, what do you call that?
I would say that's Darian.raw underscore.
Underscore.
Okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
Darian,
what do you
Darian, get a better handle
for you? How do you approach off-season speed development for your players?
Wow, that's actually a really good question. I go with the Charlie Francis model-ish. So short to long. They're an acceleration-based sport. And so when you think about in season, that's all they do. So we will kind of sandwich it and do what we do with everything else. We will go short to long intensity. But then on the back end, we'll go long to short, if you will, tempos. So that's where I love utilizing things like straight-legged scissor bounding at tempos, just to get that quote-unquote flight phase that they never experience, because it's a protective mechanism, right? Like, you see hamstrings popping up more and more in basketball. Probably makes sense that you need to do top-end speed because they don't do it. Yeah. But a hijack to get there, straight-legged scissor bound. Yeah. It's a great way of doing it. But yeah, back to your model, or back to the question, short to long.
Nice. I have a question here from Jake Tora.
Oh, now Jake's going to come with some heat, man.
Well, now you know Jake. So when I say you know Jake, when I tell you what he submitted, you're going to be like, yep. He said one word, and it's just Achilles. Okay. Now, look, listen. Yeah. What I'm taking from that, though, is what did you learn from your Achilles injury?
Yeah. So what I learned is you can actually get pretty intense pretty quick. And a lot of people go the exact opposite route.
Yeah, totally. You just caught me off guard by saying that.
Yeah, you can go intense really, really quick. And there's a difference between wear, like insertion versus belly.
Oh. Right?
Mine was insertion, and I'm also fiscally irresponsible. So I went pretty intense early.
Relatable.
Believe it or not, I went to like some Marinovich type work with the pool stuff. And so once again, the first thing you lose, speed.
Yeah.
So how do I get speed with a blown wheel? You can go in the pool. And so what I would do is I would do open chain and I would just rip the heck out of my foot in the pool. I would do circles. I would do flicks. I would do all these things because I can't get hurt. There's not enough force, but I'm definitely training speed. I'm just training it locally. And then you get more into the pool. Now I'm doing swings, handling those forces because the bot, it's unloaded. I'm in a boot. I can't move it. That's right. How you introduce movement. And then progress from there. So that was, that's where we started. We started very violent. Like, it was like, okay, warming up in the pool. And then you start flicking. And then you make bubbles. And then we make waves, right? That's what I'm going to use for my daughter when we're growing. In bath time. but that's how we start. We get to speed as quick as possible. It's just unbelievably unloaded. And then going to traditional Marinovich. Then you can go like super cat.
Yeah.
So then we go to the super cat flicks and all that. Now, with that being said, it was unbelievably assisted, but that's where we started. The one thing that I did I thought was really, really cool was I would reverse band what we did before that, I would sit on a bench and then I would take a medicine ball and I would just, you know how like you're tapping your foot?
Yes.
Because you're like, genius. You're anxious.
Oh my God, you put the medicine ball on your knee?
I put the medicine ball on my knee.
You son of a bitch, that's brilliant.
Yeah, it's so simple, right?
Oh my God, that's great.
That
was my introduction to plyos, and then I would just put a medicine ball, and then I would put a plate, and then I would, and that's how I built it.
Do you feel
it,
like, right? It's one of those things where it's like you're grateful for what you've learned, or you're grateful it happened, or where are you at with it now?
I'm obsessed with return to play because of it.
Yeah.
Because if you understand return to play, you understand training and vice versa. And what I see in the physical therapy world a lot is they understand therapy. Yes. They don't understand return to play.
Yeah.
And they don't understand training. And, you know, I think Charlie Weingroff said this a long time ago, but it was like training equals rehab and rehab equals training. And then, you know, there's a bunch of stupid semantic arguments about that. But the reality is, it is true. Like, the faster your rehab looks like training, then that means you're doing the right things. Because all it is reverse engineering what you should be doing if you are healthy. And a lot of people miss that. A lot of people miss that. And then, of course, you can go down the rabbit hole of all the tendon protocols from a supplementation standpoint. And then, a ton of yielding isometrics, build overcoming isometrics. But Jake Tura, shout out to you for somehow being this obsessed with tendons.
I know.
I mean, he's the whale.
He's the biggest creep of all.
He's the biggest creep. And I respect it. I do too.
Yeah. Creep recognize creep.
Facts.
Big facts. All right, Zach, you got another one for us?
All right. JPOC_ How can the everyday fitness consumer practically apply microdosing principles?
This is such a cool topic because I want to be able to take this ideology and bring it to the, I mean, to any species. And I don't care if it's a dog all the way to a human, yeah. Right? When we think about health and longevity, we think about good food, and we think about good sleep, and we think about all these things. But because of the lives that we live in Western society, we're blocked all the time. And the reality is, if you can create a microdosing model around your day, wow, I think you could have everything you need. Everyone's working from home to a certain degree, or there's a remote situation, or they have constraints, or they have to battle traffic, regardless of whatever you are, right? You can build in quote unquote microdosing to doing 2 to 3 sessions per day, and it's not going to take anything away from what you do. So how about we give an example? Give me an occupation, Zach.
IT sales.
Okay, IT sales. So you're traveling a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're on the road. All right, great. You're going to have access to hotels. All right. First thing I would do in that scenario, I would go, what is my biggest clients of the day? All right, I'm going to train somehow before that or after that. Okay, I got whatever else I got going on. But the first thing I'm doing is when I wake up, I'm going for that walk. I'm going to hit that walk. That's going to be my first session. Rather you doing Peloton, whether you're doing treadmill, or you're just going out for a brisk walk, that's a session right there. And people really take for granted that those low hanging fruit, like aerobic capacity or whatever. So that's a session one. Session two could be your actually weightlifting session. Now, if I'm thinking like optimization for someone who wants to talk that talk, when I train, I'm more hyper-focused after that than ever. Like that, when I want to really get some work done on a computer, if I train first, I am unbelievably sharp.
My ADHD brain has to have it.
Yeah.
So that's where, okay, I'm in the hotel gym. Cool, this is what I got. I'm going to work up to this. Here's my strength and training session, blah, blah, blah. And then, cool, I'm going to go off see my client. Then you can do another walk at night. Boom, done. Or you can start or end your day, which is jump roping. That's how I get my plyometrics in. Cool.
I think Rhonda Patrick has something. I think she calls it like exercise nuggets or like.
Yeah, like the snacks, exercise snacks.
Yes,
snacks. It's the same thing. They've already doing it. They're already doing it. I'm going to hopefully create a product one day that's awesome. That replicates that kind of ideology. But the reality is.
Sounds cooler.
It just sounds way cooler.
Way cooler.
Way cooler, especially if you're in the Silicon Valley. Way cooler. But, you know, I want to make it for dudes that are actually like legit trying to train.
Hell yeah.
And then you can just undulate your multi-day model, opposed to I'm gonna strength train on this day.
You kind of train like that anyways. Just sneaks in like, all right, I got 10 minutes. I'm gonna do RDLs. All right, 3 hours later, I'm gonna do a bunch of pull-ups.
Hell yeah.
I mean, it's
you're walking the walk, bro.
Yeah.
Well, I wish I looked better then. Sleep is the number one.
That's tough. Yeah, you got a little
shout out
one,
to babies.
Out to babies.
Shout out infants and
creeps. Also, shout out to my wife. She's incredible.
Yeah. All right. I got another question for you here.
Yeah.
This is from A. Gibb Holmes. What field outside of S&C has impacted your coaching the most?
Outside of S&C?
So
we wouldn't include nutrition. We wouldn't include physiotherapy. Yeah,
let's eliminate fitness. Just anything health related, you got to scrap it.
Business.
Yeah.
Business. Like, and I'm a very unsuccessful business person. If I was successful as a business person, then I wouldn't be coaching.
Right? Hey, yeah, I heard love coaching.
I love coaching that much that I make myself fail at my own business. but what's cool is I'm learning so much about organization, manufacturing. Okay. If you understand, then you understand people. And that's what's cool. Like, I think business, if you can bring a product to market, make it somewhat successful, fill a need. But the most important thing, like I can fill a need, but I can only fill a need for people that's got deep pockets.
Yeah.
Because that's how much prototyping costs. That's how much, you know, the equipment that I'm trying to get off the ground, like that stuff, dude.
Can you plug the equipment real quick?
Oh yeah. So Indy Strength. So Not Done Yet is my company, NDY. And so we'll call it Indy for short. So Indy Strength Equipment, the ideology behind that is to bring performance training to where performance is played. Nice. I really want to break down the weight room walls, because I don't think the weight room is where you get better. I think the pitch, the field, the court, that's where you get better. So the idea is, man, look at track and field has done back in the day. track and field, everything was done on basically on the track and field.
Right.
And guess who was the sports performance coach? The track and field coach.
Totally.
That's how we still, and then you're wondering where the skill development aspect is coming from. If you're a general physical preparation specialist or a quote unquote strength coach, and you understand skill development and you understand the end use, which is the skill, then you understand the full spectrum of human performance. That is track and field. That is sprint coaches. I think we can do a model very similar to that in team sports, but it takes more collaboration.
Yeah.
And that's where you need more people, staffers, you know, stuff like that. So the idea is, you know, for the strength equipment, it's going, most of it, 90% of it is going to be accessibility, and it's going to be the ability to transport. I need to bring this anywhere. Wherever performance is being done, I can bring this stuff with me. So, yeah.
Can we talk about the box that rocks?
The box that rocks. What's nuts is like, is the NBA. Once again, creativity out of necessity. In the NBA, you travel 4.5 months out of the year. So you're at, you know, the Four Seasons, which is nice, or the Ritz. Hotels, great. But when you get to the hotels, you just want to sleep.
Right.
So you're not getting a lot of training done there if you're a high minute player.
Right.
And then 3.5 times a week, you're not training really hard in between games. So you got to train on game day in some form or fashion. And then what I found out is, oh, they will just skip you if they want to. Hey, Corey, I want to come into the weight room and lift with you before the game. Great. 20 minutes later, what happened? They're on the court now. Oh, they purposely skipped me. They didn't want to lift.
My bad, bro.
Got it. I was like, oh, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, you know what? I'm going to circumvent that. I'm going to put the training on the court.
Nice.
They can't miss me.
Yeah.
And all the coaches see
it. No ducking.
And if they duck me there, they expose.
Yeah.
So I made the box that rocks. So we call it the Indy Box, and it's spelled BXX. And the idea of it was a travelable piece that I could take in the NBA. And it literally converts into a squat rack, has ramps, landmine attachment, split squat attachment.
That's so dope.
It's pretty wild, man. And now, pretty irresponsible, because I mean, it's like just straight up prototyping, right? And it was hard. Like, I mean, we were using basically fabricators that are local to build the first. And it thing looked like
logistically,
it
logistically so much. As you're talking, like, Jesus, so much work went into this.
So much.
But money.
Well, I'll get into that in a second. I've been very fortunate. But it was like, the first iteration of it looked like something from Mad Max. Like, yeah. And I can't believe professional athletes went to that thing. It was like, yeah, I'll do a step above that. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Sure. All right, awesome. But anyways, the reality is I needed convenience. I needed a supply convenience. And I had to bring performance training to where performance was played, which is the basketball court.
Yeah.
And so now we created consistency. And now that we have consistency, we have training. And if I didn't have consistency, I couldn't have training. So in the NBA, the minimum requirement list was like power blocks, a Swiss ball, and mini bands. So that's all we'd get in the hallway. And I'm like, these are the best athletes in the world. 4.5 months we're traveling. And the best equipment we got is power blocks.
That's wild.
Now, you can get a lot done with some power blocks.
Yeah.
I've seen some creativity, some power blocks. But the reality is, these are the best players in the world. Yeah. And over a third of their year and half of their season, they don't have access to Jack.
Wow.
In a convenient way, which is around the game. And so, yeah, we created this thing. It has a squat rack attachment. I mean, it's wild. And it picks up, rolls on wheels. And me and my assistant, we load it on the conveyor belt, gets on the plane, take it off the conveyor belt, throw it on the equipment truck, roll it into the arena, roll it right on the baseline, boom, boom, pow. We're training. It's wild.
Box that rocks.
The box that rocks, man.
That box does. Yeah. It rocks. It's pretty awesome, dude.
It's pretty wild. And the cool thing is, we're working on some ideas of electrifying it. And I can't go into too many details about that, but
proprietary.
But the cool thing about it is, you don't have to travel plates anymore.
Wow.
So if you don't have to travel plates, electromagnetic resistance, everything's there. You can do some pretty cool things. So it'd be like Tonal, but actually cool. So.
Yeah.
Box, not rocks. Shout out to Tonal.
Yeah.
Shout out to the box that rocks.
Hell yeah.
Box.
You want to do rave?
Yeah, well, you already did a rant.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. Uncued. So, yeah. we heard your rant.
Yeah,
let's hear a rave. What's going on good in the field that you really like?
More basketball coaches, or strength coaches, actually play basketball. No offense to Zach. But
playing high school is pretty freaking nice.
And he's nice. I've seen his jump shots. Nice. But the reality is, you know, football is dominated by football strength coaches. And that's a good thing because they understand the context of sport. They understand the nuances and the traditions and can move the needle, right? And I'm not saying you have to be a basketball player to be a good strength coach. Absolutely not. Not sure. Saying that. But if we're talking about the upper echelon and the last 1% and you're really trying, I think it helps, right? So I'm seeing more basketball dudes, like hoopers, that, and what that means is physical preparation is important. And when you think about sports like wrestling, baseball, football, that is the cornerstone of all of those organizations, all of those teams, is resistance training. So what does that do? Why does football strength coaches get paid what they get paid? So if you want to be paid, you got to make physical preparation a value. And if it's not a value, like, I don't care if you're a fencer. If fencer is all of a sudden most jacked dudes on the planet and running crazy splits, I guess what? Strength coaches in fencing are going to make more money because they're more valuable, and you're going to get better products because of that. And that's what I'm seeing now. And I think it's pretty cool. I think it's actually really, really cool. And I'm excited to see more basketball players as strength coaches because it gives validity to why what we do matters.
What are three things that someone can start doing now to follow in your footsteps?
Well, first off, don't.
Yeah,
because you'll have one Achilles if you do that. To follow in my footsteps, if you want to be a strength coach in basketball, is that how you're doing this?
Yeah,
play the sport. I mean, first and foremost, play the sport. It's going to help out tremendously. Rather you're, you know, amateur or not, playing the sport gives you the context and the feel of why. So, for example, if you don't play the sport, all right, go play pickup 2 to 3 times a week.
Yep.
No, oh, join a league, dog.
Oh, how hurt are you right now?
Yeah.
Like, how much is your joints hurt?
Back squat.
Hey, but in the plan, we got a squat today.
Yep.
A word?
Yeah.
Like, that's going to hurt after that hard practice session 2 days ago that I'm still hurting from.
Yeah.
So then you understand the context because you felt it. Like, when you feel something, and then, of course, now you can have your traps, right? You can, or your safety nets, where you have objective measures, force plates, HRV, you know, whatever, to say where a guy is. But that feeling, that's one. Two, following my footsteps. I think this is the coolest quote. Everybody is right and everybody is wrong at the same time. Like, even your best experts in the world, even if they work in basketball, even if they work in your field,
yeah,
or football, whatever, your environment is what makes it right. They will never know your environment. I don't care if it's NCAA, Division I, in the same state, in this 20 miles away from each other. Everything is different based off the coaches you have, based off the logistics you have. So get all the information you can from people that you think are right, but in your environment, understand why that can be wrong.
Yeah.
Because what you see too much of is copy and paste.
Right.
And that drives me nuts because that means it's not genuine. It's not, you didn't solve a problem. You copied someone's solution.
Yeah.
That means you don't care and you're just a one level thinker. I need level 3, level 4, level 5 thinkers.
Yeah.
And when I'm not around that, I get Zach's seen that. This is where I get frustrated, is when I see tradition in different places. Like, I brought that here, so I'm going to do it here. I brought that here, so I'm going to do it here. I brought that. Microdosing that I did at Stanford is significantly different than what I did in the NBA. It's significantly different than what I'm doing at UT. Like, everywhere I went, it's a different version of itself. Same ideology,
right?
But that implementation and application, completely different. And then three, if you double down on yourself, it will return tenfold. And I love pouring into other people. Right. Because we're in a people business. Right. Pour into my athletes so I can make them better. We don't pour into ourselves enough. Mm-hmm. And I think it's OK to be selfish about your development, whether it's physical or mental. And that's where I think you should focus on how much you're getting better, and everyone else around you is going to feel that, and you're going to have that effect. But, you know, the pouring into people thing, like, yeah, I pour into my wife and my kid. Those are the only people I'm willing to pour in for.
Yeah.
Everybody else, I'm doing so much to better myself that it's going to affect everyone around me in my work environment. But as far as pouring into other people, absolutely not.
Right.
Pouring into my wife, pouring into my kid, that is it.
Love that.
Yeah.
Last one. This might be my favorite one. Unsolicited advice. It can be anything. whatever you want.
Unsolicited advice?
Yeah. So technically it's solicited because we're asking you for it.
Right.
But it is like you could literally just be, you could walk out of this door and pass someone on the gym floor on your way out and you just lean in and you just say, hey, and just blast them with some unsolicited advice.
Zach hears me say this one a lot. You woke up today. Like some people didn't get to do that. Like anybody I see in a bad mood, that's the first thing I say to them. Like, hey, bro, you woke up today.
You want to know what the last thing you want to hear when you're in a bad mood?
That
is Corey saying, but it's because you're right.
I mean,
motherfucker's right.
It hurt. Like, I don't know. Like for me, I've had bad situations. I've never had bad days.
Yeah.
I get mad at certain situations. I get disgusted at certain situations, but I don't have bad days. Yeah. I don't vibe with people who can like, they continuously have like consistently bad days.
Right. They're
because
operating
of a situation like prior.
Right.
I'm like,
you had a tough meeting that hour of your day sucked.
And then
whole body of work didn't suck.
Exactly. Like just 24 hours. Yeah. All right. We're going to give whatever to sleep. All right, that 1 hour, god awful. Mm-hmm. Right? But then after that, you're like, if that's going to affect the rest of these hours, come on, man. Like, then you're not enjoying life. Like, then whatever you're doing is not it. Like, it is not it. Because when I walk away from work, I walk away from work. Like, when I get in my truck, I mean, I have a work phone, and that work phone doesn't even get looked at.
It's awesome.
I might piss some people off. But I'll get back to you when I get back to you.
Yeah.
But I have to turn that off because I'm going to enjoy the time that I have with my family. And that's a big reason why I came to college. Like I had another year on my contract in the NBA. It's the reason why I left because I have a baby girl and I'm going to be present and I'm going to enjoy that.
I can respect that. And I can also relate.
Oh, man.
Speaking of time, we're out of it.
Boom.
We got to go. But I'll say, Corey, thank you for coming on. How awesome.
Awesome.
We had so much fun. Great. Corey, where can people find you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Social media is just Instagram. I don't play around with anything else. It's I just don't. You don't want to see me type. Like, I ain't trying to be on X. You don't need to hear it. Because words, that's a little different. /strength, S-C-H-L-E-S, strength, and on Instagram. And that's really it, man.
Awesome. All right. Everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We'll catch you next time.